Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. It's time for The Upswing on WTMJ. Presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Showcasing businesses, entrepreneurs, and community leaders throughout the great state of Wisconsin. Here's Jeff Sherman.
Because I'm going to make this place yours.
Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, Milwaukee. Sunshine and smiles this past weekend. Really, I mean, honestly, all 11 days at the Wisconsin State Fair were just absolutely beautiful. Yeah, we had that one day where it was a little crisp. We had a little bit of rain, but really just absolutely beautiful weather at the Wisconsin State Fair for the entire run. I haven't seen final numbers yet or attendance figures, but I'm not shy in predicting that last year's number will be surpassed. That's going to be my big, bold prediction right out of the gate. Last year, the fair did 1,043,350 guests. That was up slightly from 2022's 1,003,450, 841,000 back in 2021, but that was kind of COVID era. So let's keep an eye out for the final numbers coming in from State Fair this week. A little bit of context, though. The State Fair of Texas did 2.3 million visitors in 2023, but it's 23 days straight. And the Minnesota State Fair, that great Minnesota State Fair in 2023, had 1.8 million people attend the great Minnesota get-together, as they call it, and that's 11 days long. So speaking of sunshine, we're going to talk solar and sustainability today. I was really interested in exploring it for our home, and I wanted to know more about the costs, the potential benefits, the savings, and more. Plus, the Milwaukee Bucks have partnered with Arch Solar, making the Wisconsin-based solar solutions company a sustainability partner. So we're going to learn more about that partnership when we talk to J.D. Smith, the director of business operations at Arch Solar. Then later in the show for the second half, we're going to talk about changes coming to Milwaukee Film. Some big decisions were made by the board of directors there recently. Changes that the executive director of the group, Ann Reed, will tell us more about. She says they're necessary and part of the organization's path to financial sustainability. First, though, two up quickly. Is there a new tax coming to a Milwaukee suburban community? In addition to the state's 5% sales tax, most counties in Wisconsin have their own sales tax. Waukesha is one of three counties without a sales tax of their own. That could change. The Milwaukee Business Journal reporting that a 35-member budget task force has been meeting since May. They released a report last week on ways that the suburban Milwaukee County can increase revenue to pay for some additional services, including looking at holding a referendum to increase the property tax levy, looking also possibly to institute a local vehicle registration fee, or, as I just said, imposing a 0.5% sales tax. The task force made no recommendations, but County Executive Paul Farrell said, "We didn't ask for a recommendation tonight because we knew that we weren't going to have a consensus." He said also, we weren't going to get to that consensus, but we wanted to get their input to really find out the key areas that we should be focusing on. Stay tuned. They'll bring it together. The county board out in Waukesha will reevaluate on August 27th with a recommendation. Next up, a win for downtown Milwaukee's U.S. Bank building. JS Online reporting that the local office of London-based Deloitte. Deloitte is an audit, consulting, tax, and business advisory services company. They've been located at Cathedral Place, just off of Cathedral Square here in downtown Milwaukee, with 70,000 square feet of office space. They will be moving to the U.S. Bank to 22,000 square feet, cutting down by like a third, but they'll be moving to the 34th floor of the U.S. Bank Center that's located at 777 East Wisconsin Avenue. Obviously, a beautiful building shining in the sky there. The Baird is the U.S. Bank Center's largest tenant. They currently have 456,000 square feet and that beautiful sign atop the building. Something to keep an eye out as you look at demand in the Central Business District for office space. It's still up, according to Cushman Wakefield and their latest report, saying that leasing compared to last year is up 10% over 2023 levels and new leasing increasing by 7% over 2023. But there's still a lot of room to fill spaces in greater downtown. But we'll keep an eye on Deloitte moving to the U.S. Bank building. Tomorrow, we're going to talk retail, some solid increases in Racine and Mequon in quarter two. But I want to know what's going on at Bayshore Town Center. So that is tomorrow's show with the general manager at Bayshore Town Center. Next, shining a light on solar. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. That's the sun. Welcome back to The Upswing. We're presented by Horicon Bank. Happy Monday. Sunshine and smiles always on The Upswing. J.D. Smith, Director of Business Operations at Arch Solar, joins us from Plymouth this morning. J.D., how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, my friend. Thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. Well, we wanted to talk specifically about Arch Solar's new partnership with the Milwaukee Bucks. We'll do that in the next segment. But first and foremost, we talked a little bit on Friday, and what I'm looking at my house in the North Shore of Greater Milwaukee. What's it going to cost for me to install solar panels? How does that work get accomplished? What are the savings? And talk to me a little bit about just what that ROI could look like moving forward, because I'm sure you're getting these questions from your residential customers each and every day.
Absolutely. So first thing I'll tell you right off the bat is we've got a free ballpark estimator. It's not anything you got to click. Just take a look at some rough pricing and some pictures of homes on our website. Because I'm going to give you the lame answer no one wants to hear. It all depends on your house, namely the roof. Is it south-facing? How much solar can we get on there? And more important to that, though, is your energy bills. That's why only about 1 in 3 homes in Wisconsin makes sense to go solar. Hmm. Because if you're like me, I run the AC constantly all summer. Yeah. So when the sun is shining, that's when I'm using my most electricity. So for me, solar is a no-brainer, because then in the winter, when my house switches to radiant heat, my electrical bill is gone, but my gas is going. So that makes me an ideal candidate for solar. But if you're someone else who has, say, electric baseboard heat, well, your highest energy bills are going to be in the winter when there's a lot less sun coming through just because the sun sets at, before 5.
So talk to us about just the key services and solutions that you have. Like, you know, where do I start if I want to explore it?
Well, the first thing you want to do is get at least a year's worth of energy bills.
Okay.
If you've just moved into a house, it's great to talk with us, but looking at how much you use your energy is really important. And we do every single size of solar, from homes all the way up to, you know, acreage measured farms. But what you're really going to be looking at is having someone come out and first see, are there trees? How old's your roof? You want it at least 10 years old, because that's the typical payback we shoot for. For high energy users, it could be lower. Sometimes it could be higher if you use very little energy.
Do you dovetail the projects into, if I need a new roof, do I wait to do solar until I need a new roof? Is that typically the case?
Absolutely. Team would recommend, and that's one of the reasons I say 1 in 3. Because the simple reason is there's no moving parts on your roof.
Uh-huh.
Once our team puts it on there, that's on there. And the less we touch it or have to mess with it, the better for everyone, because there's, like we said, it's pretty static. So then if you say, hey, I'm going to have to re-roof in 5 years, well, then we're going to have to get you the solar and then come back out and take it all off and reinstall it. I'd say, hey, just wait for us, call us, we'll talk with your roofer about how we can make it more affordable for everyone and put them on right as the new roof goes on.
And then how do you work directly then with the utility companies in the markets you're in?
The utilities. because the way that solar works in Wisconsin and in most places in the country is you plug into the utility grid. So every single system that we turn on has to go through what's called an interconnection application and commissioning. So that means we have to tell the utilities, here's what we're doing. Our in-house engineers have to show them the electrical one-line diagram to make sure that it plugs into the grid safely. And then they come out before it's turned on, which we call commissioning, mm-hmm. and run through a test, flip the switch and make sure that it works. Because the reality is every solar system that's plugged in on a residence is almost always going to be plugged straight back into the grid. And how it works is the utilities feed you at night.
Okay.
But during the day, when the sun's shining, like today is perfect for it. Right now, I'm sitting in my air-conditioning house in Cedarburg, and I'm not sending anything onto the grid for solar.
Okay. All right. J.D. Smith joins us from Arch Solar. They've been providing solar and energy solutions to Wisconsin homes and businesses since 2003. When we come back, information and some analysis on how they went about forming a new partnership with the Milwaukee Bucks. And then I'm going to have JD talk about some recent projects and installations that kind of highlight Arch Solar's capabilities and how they could work possibly in your home. This is The Upswing. We're presented by Horicon Bank, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. You're listening to WTMJ. The Milwaukee Bucks picked a Plymouth-based solar contractor to be its new partner in sustainability education. J.D. Smith joins us this morning. J.D., talk a little bit about, please, the new partnership with the Bucks. What motivated you to kind of begin these conversations, and what does it mean kind of looking into the future in terms of opportunities to teach fans about solar installation for not only residential, but what you do commercially in the market as well?
Well, what motivated us was really two things. One, we're a Plymouth-founded company. That's where our founder's farm, Ed Zintifer, he went solar on his farm back in 2003 and then realized the potential for it. And so from there, we sort of grew as a business very gradually over the last 21 years from Plymouth. But where things in Wisconsin for us really took off was with the Milwaukee Markets group buys, partnering with the city back in the late 20-teens to educate and go through the city of Milwaukee's programs. And that really showed that the Milwaukee market was ready for solar and that there were a lot of people, especially in the North Shore, who were interested in taking advantage of it. So for us to focus on Milwaukee, that was a big part of it. And then the other was that they really put in the work over time to make sure that it was a good fit for us and that it was authentic to what we were trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the team also partners with Johnson Controls on its sustainability initiatives. What will it mean in terms of integration throughout the season for you? Obviously, it's exposure to fans, but specifically in terms of sustainability, what you're able to do at Deer District and Fiserv, what are you looking at implementing?
Well, there's a few things I won't be able to talk about, but I can tell you for sure that when the Bucks evaluate things, especially like what they're doing with Johnson Controls, they really do go full in on it, and that there's a lot of property on the Deer District. But it's, like I said about homes, not every business, not every building is a good fit for solar for it to make both environmental and economic sense. Mm-hmm. With that being said, we've done projects in and around the Deer District before, like Who's on Third or the nearby Wisconsin Center just recently. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of opportunity there.
Do you work with a lot of small businesses like Who's on Third, which is a tavern right on Old World Third Street? How do you work with them, and what benefits are they seeing from solar?
Well, we work directly with the owners of the building specifically, and that's actually a great, really important qualifying question. So I hope they don't mind, but like a big partner of us in the Milwaukee area is Blifford Lumber. When you work with building owners who know they're going to be in the building for long term, meaning, hey, I've been in this building for the last 10 years, I know exactly what the energy bills are like, and I'm going to be here for the foreseeable future, then they're able to see solar as an investment in their building, and it makes it kind of a no-brainer. So we work with small businesses that fit that profile a lot. And then you have medium and larger businesses that either have sustainability goals or they have huge electrical loads that they want to offset.
Okay. So kind of getting back to the residential component of what you do, talk us through some of the, you know, the specific range of costs. I know you said it's obviously based on square footage of the home and what it all entails, but can you give us a range in terms of costs?
Sure.
And then what it looks like to kind of recoup those costs down the road, what that time frame is?
Sure. For so like a smaller home like mine, you're looking at around $20,000 to $25,000 before incentives. And then in the state of Wisconsin, you get 30% federal tax credit, which is not from the state, and then a firm handshake and $500 through the state of Wisconsin Focus on Energy.
Okay.
So for us, that's $21,000 is a very popular size because that's just enough to offset the big bills during the sunny years, but not enough to require a huge upfront investment. What we're really seeing, though, is our average system price keeps climbing because people, especially in the North Shore, are choosing to add batteries. And that's due to, one, the recent outages, and two, people are starting to become energy conscious about where does all that electricity come from and what happens if it either gets a lot more expensive or doesn't come as when I want it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you said also if you look kind of out to Lake Country or some of the more rural communities you serve, one of the biggest reasons to go solar is when a sump pump fails, right?
Absolutely. What really, when I was originally assessing what I thought the interest would be for battery backups, I really did not expect that. It was, at first, it was really rural homes that had, one, frequent outages from trees, and two, if you've had your basement flood from the sump pump going out, you know you never want it to happen again, and that makes the investment look very different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. So a lot of reasons why people are going to go solar, but you know, many times it's like, oh my gosh, we have to look at creative ways to continue to save money, and we're going to need to replace this sump pump. Let's do it all in. JD, I appreciate your time this morning. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you again soon. Arch Solar has a new partnership with the Bucks and is available to bring sunshine into your world. Welcome back to The Upswing. We're presented by Horicon Bank from the WTMJ Talk and Text Line, which is 855-616-1620 from the 262. Just to wrap up our last conversation, a bunch of homes in Bayview with lake views that have been extensively remodeled and expanded in recent years have installed very stylish solar panels that blend right into the updated architecture. Good to hear. Good to hear. A good, wonderful conversation about sustainability and sunshine. And now we'll pivot a little bit to financial and film sustainability with Ann Reed, who joins us in studio, the executive director of Milwaukee Film. Thanks for taking time this morning, Ann. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having
me. Of course. So Milwaukee Film on Friday announced kind of a refocus of its organizational mission and lens, if you will. Kind of moving on from some of your education programs and artist services to better align, I'm guessing, with kind of the core mission of what Milwaukee Film's all about. But talk us through some of those moves and what they involve budgetary-wise.
Sure. It's really a return to our roots, right? We were founded as the Milwaukee Film Festival 16 years ago. In 2018, when we started operating the Oriental Theater, historic, iconic theater, that brought us into year-round, what you might call art house programming, really varied programming with foreign films and older films and new films. As we grew into other things, some wonderful education programs and programs to support local artists. Mm-hmm. And what we're doing now is really going back to that original core. What can we do that no one else does? Art house programming and the Milwaukee Film Festival.
So what were some of the factors as the board and yourself? Now you've been in the role for
7 months.
7 months. All right. Yeah. But obviously extensive nonprofit and professional experience coming into a new organization. You probably brought a little different lens to, hey, organizationally, how can we continue to move the organization forward? So what were some of the factors that the board looked at in terms of kind of getting you back to, hey, we need to focus on what we do and do well? And that may mean some short-term financial challenges.
Sure, absolutely. Really, every organization, maybe even every person, should regularly be thinking about what is the thing that only we can do, that if we weren't doing it, it wouldn't be here, and that would be an important loss. For us, that That answer was absolutely clear. The Milwaukee Film Festival is a true treasure already in this community, and ongoing art house programming is a treasure to everybody who experiences it every day. So we focused on that in the same way. I don't know if you remember in June, Alverno College announced that they were saying, what can only we do to prepare women for engaged lives? Mm-hmm. The answer was what they're uniquely reputed for is nursing, education, their business work. And they actually cut their English and history majors. Hmm. Why? They were great.
Yeah.
But it was that other people are offering that. Alverno is uniquely offering what it is offering to women. That's essentially what we did.
Yeah, and you see that oftentimes in a lot of organizations. You're locked in on what you do, but then you're like, ooh, this revenue road looks really nice. How about this opportunity? How about that opportunity? And suddenly you have seven different business entities under this one umbrella, and it's just not sustainable moving forward. So you have to readdress and reorganize.
I think we're at a time in our country where every organization, maybe you haven't seen it yet, maybe you have, but every organization should be and is thinking in this way.
So moving forward, what are the metrics that you and the board will look at to kind of gauge success?
Well, now that we are completely focused on the festival and our year-round programming, the metrics are pretty simple. How many people are coming? Are they having a good time? How are we measuring whether they're having a good time? What kind of offerings can we bring? How many filmmakers did we bring to the festival last year versus this year? Those kinds of things. Because we have such a pure focus, the metrics become self-revealing.
Mm-hmm. Ann Reed from the Milwaukee Film Festival, Milwaukee Film Executive Director, joins us this morning. When we come back, is the inaugural Dialogues Documentary Festival still on the docket? And I want to talk through the financial dynamics of how the organization works with the Downer and Oriental Theaters and what that means for the future of Milwaukee Film. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. Ann Reed from Milwaukee Film joins us this morning. It's the organization that runs the Milwaukee Film Festival and the historic Oriental and Downer Theaters on Milwaukee's East Side. So, Ann, talk to us about the business relationship with the Oriental and the Downer. I think, you know, some people may think, oh, well, they went and bought these two theaters. That's millions and millions of dollars. Of course they need to realign their finances. But what's the relationship with those theaters from the organization standpoint?
Sure, and that's not the story at all. First of all, people ask me all the time, so let me get this out. Okay. Yes, the Downer is open and running. You can go see a movie there tonight. Secondly, there are actually two very different arrangements. Both of them are centered around this idea of what can only we do. These are two historic theaters. One actually did close. One was in danger of closing.
Right.
Who can save theaters like that? A nonprofit organization that has contributed revenue as well as earned revenue. So it's a key part of our mission that those theaters are open. Now, to the business relationship, they're quite different. The Oriental is they are both leased. We rent both of
them.
The Oriental is a long-term relationship with the owners of that building and a wonderful relationship. Mm-hmm. So grateful to them. So that will be ongoing in that way. The Downer is a 5-year lease with an option to purchase, and we're talking to people about possibly being part of a campaign to be able to exercise that option and own the space.
So as you continue to talk to donors and sponsors, one of those things is, hey, in looking forward, we'd like to find a way to purchase the Downer Theater.
And we know there are people who care deeply that the Downer stays open, and we hope we connect with them.
Yeah. From a programming standpoint for both of those entities, how do you think you'll continue to evolve the programming? I noticed you added Oppenheimer and Barbie, kind of going back to last summer, but two huge films that are still drawing big audiences. How do you look at the programming for both of those sites?
Sure. So our overall mission is we are what's called an art house cinema. Yes, the movies you can see anywhere, you can see with us, and we hope you do. But also, last weekend we had Seven Samurai. We had a Hitchcock Festival. You can see things that are different that you wouldn't be able to see anywhere else. It's actually fun to explore what works well at the Downer versus the Oriental. Hmm. They're only six blocks apart, but the neighborhoods are quite different.
Oh, interesting.
And so that's been fun. And then as we really step into pure film, but we still care so much about kids, we really want to think about how to deepen the ways that kids can experience film at our theaters.
Yeah, that's a as a as a parent of a 12-year-old and just see how she dives into film or doesn't dive into film. You know, many times it's just the big releases. That's what they're looking at. But you have to have really quality programming that, you know, kind of speaks to their hearts and minds. And like, hey, you're going to come, you're going to be educated, but you're also going to be in this beautiful space. And I guess that's a differentiator for you, too, at both of these buildings.
The Downer is the oldest theater in Wisconsin, and the Oriental is probably the most beautiful. It is a true privilege to be in those spaces.
All right. So what has been the reaction to stakeholders and your board with the recent announcement of some of the cuts and just moving forward and what you want to do as an organization?
You know, yesterday I was walking my little dog, Sam, and a neighbor who I don't know all that well stopped me and said, I want to thank you for making the tough decisions. And I said, thank you, even though obviously it wasn't just me. People that we have been reaching out to people continuously since the announcement on Friday, and people say, I'm on a board where we're going through that same kind of analysis. I'm glad to hear this because the festival needs to continue and I want to see you doing what's necessary for that. The level of support and understanding has been wonderful.
Good, good. Ann Reid, the executive director of Milwaukee Film, joins us. When we come back, we'll get a little bit of insight into the 17th annual Milwaukee Film Festival in 2025. That begins April 24th. Seems like a long way away, but it's not. Time goes oh so very quickly. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Happy Monday. The Upswing Coffee Index, something we promised to bring you a couple times a week. This morning, I stopped at a place that I usually don't. $2.75 plus tax for a 16-ounce coffee at City Market on Capitol Drive, right in beautiful Shorewood. So I got to $2.92 for my 16-ounce coffee, the Valentine coffee there, which is one of my favorite. Producer Jaslyn, 12-ounce. I love the diversity of spots we're going to. They stopped at Full of Beans Cafe on South 2nd Street in Pittsburgh. But 12 ounces, Jazz? $2.97?
Hey, it's on the way here. I like it.
Okay, it's all about convenience. I'm going to give you that. It is all about convenience. Convenience drives everything. We'll keep an eye on that for you. Also, I got to mention this. A neighbor brought over some mushroom coffee over the weekend. So later in the week, I'll tell you all about mushroom coffee and the costs around mushroom coffee and some of the benefits, too, because it's really good stuff. A little lower caffeine, but maybe a little higher price, but I might have to add it to my routine. Ann Reid continues to join us from Milwaukee Film. We appreciate her time. So, and looking big picture at Milwaukee Film and also the industry as a whole, I love every weekend when the box office receipts come out. Everyone gets all excited. Oh, we did this, we did that. But I truly feel like the industry, I don't want to say it isn't coming back, but it has shifted so much. So how do you account for that and kind of form your own future moving forward?
Sure. Remember, I'm new to the industry still.
Yes.
And therefore find it fascinating. Obviously, the big trends that everybody knows about are that streaming has affected the way people consume film. Mm-hmm. And I have a theory that really streaming plus COVID and everybody being home all the time really taught people to seek things out from home that they previously went out for, but they still come out to film. They still want to come together. To me, what is most striking, as I see how it affects us, is not so much an overall trend, but how variable it is. Hmm. You're going along and then there's a writer's strike. And now the supply really changes. Or The Fall Guy, which should have done great because it's got Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt. You've got your Barbin and your Hymer. Mm-hmm. and yet that movie did not do well. So, and we're affected by that. So organizations like ours need to be strong enough to ride some waves that are just going to keep coming in the industry.
Yeah, and you need to be really strategic in terms of what programming you're putting in your spaces. I mean, there were 504 new releases in the U.S. and Canada last year. I mean, that's not a ton of movies, but you got to pick, you do your best to pick and choose the ones that are going to drive additional revenue and bring in new customers. What about the promotions and maybe the popcorn. Like, does that drive people in beyond what's on the screen?
We discounts bring people in. I did want to say with respect to programming, okay, yes. I want to specifically say with respect to programming, it is part of our core mission to bring really broad programming. So even if XYZ film would fill the theater, we need to be sure that we're bringing the full variety of our house cinema, because that's who we are and what
we do.
So that, just that uniqueness that you're not going to see The Seven Samurai anywhere else this weekend or for a long time on the big screen, that brings people in. Nutritional yeast on the popcorn seems to have a big impact.
I'm a big fan of the brewer's yeast. Yeah, like it just seems to be something you can only get at the Oriental and Downer, which, you know, other people are adding different, you know, toppings to popcorn, but it makes a difference.
People ask about it. We actually have a t-shirt that you can buy online, mkefilm.org, and it says, "I'm just here for the nutritional yeast," and people have bought that t-shirt.
All right. I love it. So what can we look forward to for the film festival in 2025? What are you working on? What insights can you give us?
There is, for something as amazing as it is, this year was my first film festival, and I was blown away. And just inspired by what it can continue to become. What if it were much more of a travel destination that people were traveling across the country to see? What if it were even more of a city institution that people look forward to? People kept saying we had so many films that they were overwhelmed by the choices and would get mixed up. How easy can we make it to curate your own experience so that you've got your own schedule? Just improving the festival experience is really an exciting idea to us.
Always fine-tuning. That's what every organization should be. Ann Reed, the executive director of Milwaukee Film, I appreciate your time and enjoy the rest of the week. And we look forward to the documentary festival in September and then obviously the next film festival in 2025.